And doing some service for Narcotics Anonymous. And I sat at a table with this lady. And we just struck up a conversation. And for some reason, you can't explain it. You just know. Our spirits connected. And she got my number and address, and I got her address and stuff and name and number and stuff. But, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm the type of person that I don't call my best friend a whole lot of times. But for some reason, this woman, she's a very giving person. A very giving person from the heart. And when conventions and different events would come up, she would send me packages from the different events that she attended from different places around the world. And I used to feel kind of funny about that, because I always feel like you should be giving something back to somebody. And then I got the opportunity to chair this convention. And something hit my spirit and said, with all that she gives, why don't you try to reach out to her and see that you can get her to come here? I had an idea that she might be coming, because I knew that the World Convention was coming up. Almost all the stuff that you see from New Zealand and Nepal and all them different places from around the world, she donated that stuff to our Chinese auction. And I called her up and I asked, would she do us the honor of coming here and sharing? Because I just felt like, not only to give something back to her, but I also felt like, from all of what Narcotics Anonymous has done in my life, I wanted to give something back to Narcotics Anonymous and the fellowship here. I called her and she said that she would come. She's here. She's from Australia. There's something I know that I want to say here that I'm missing, maybe because of the mic and being up here on stage. So I guess maybe I just should just skip past all of that. With no further ado, I give you Kitty from Australia.
I'm Miss Kitty. I'm a recovering addict. And I come from the land down under, known as Australia. I want to tell you a little bit where I've come from. And I still find this quite difficult. And it's only through the program of Narcotics Anonymous that I've been given a voice. My childhood wasn't a childhood. I had a mother who was a morphine addict, and I learned how to shoot her up at about 4 years old. Because I knew if she had her medicine, I was okay. I wasn't getting bashed. I wasn't getting told to go out and thieve. And I wasn't having to look after my two younger sisters. You know, it's really strange. I only started IDing probably just after I was 8 or 9 years clean, because I was still so ashamed of where I came from. And it was, maybe it wasn't shame. I didn't recognise shame in the first few years of my recovery. I just believed full-heartedly what I was told as a child, that one, there's something fundamentally wrong with you, or you are mad. You are crazy. And I grew up and believed that all my life. Yeah, I apologise now because I'll probably slip back into my addictive profanity a few times. So I'm just apologising now. Okay. Oh, somebody wanted me to say the word crikey. Okay, there, I'm done. Kui to everybody out there, that's welcome from our Indigenous population. My father was an alcoholic who was a Korean Navy. You know, so I never saw him very much. I was left with my mother for, you know, long periods of time. And when my father did come home, I didn't know who he was. Because either he'd come home with a beard or he'd come home, you know, with a different look. And I didn't know that this was my father. You know, my mother entertained a lot. She was like the good time girl. And she used to go to Sydney a lot and entertain the US soldiers. Now, when I was 5 years old, she would exchange me for sex, for her drugs. At 6 years old, my mother went missing, and the police turned up at our door and said she was in jail. Now, I didn't know what the hell was going on. I mean, I was a pretty smart kid, but I stopped talking when I was getting abused because I told somebody once and they didn't believe me. And again, I was told, there's something wrong with you and you're crazy. That doesn't happen to people. So I stayed silent for the next 10, 14 years. My mother was in jail for, I don't know if you have the term here, vehicular manslaughter. You do? And that was due to the fact that she killed one of my sisters. Now, I lived with that for a long time and believed wholeheartedly it was my fault because I was the oldest and I couldn't take care of her. You know, my father came back into my life when I was 7 and got, and this was unheard of in, you know, the late 50s, early 60s. It was unheard of, you know, a man, a father, to get custody of 2 young girls. Now, because he was in the Navy and I'd been shunted around from, you know, uncle to auntie, and my behaviour was pretty tragic and pretty outrageous. You know, I was lighting fires, I was, you know, jumping in and out of people's bedroom windows, you know, I was stealing milk off the doorsteps, all that sort of stuff. So they thought it was best. Thank you, God. I just need to invite God in. Thanks. I was taken into a state home and stayed there for the next 6 years. Now, in the meantime, I was introduced to barbiturates. You know, I was a child of the Valley of the Dolls, Secanol, Nimbatel, Quaaludes. And these, I learned how to, you know, what colour took me up, what colour took me down, and what colour took me sideways. You know, I was very proficient at it. My father came to visit when I was about 10 years old, and I didn't recognise him. And I would just, you know, I totally flipped out. And to the sense where I started bashing, you know, a lot of the people I was in the girls' home with, and I also started cutting myself up, because that was a relief to me. You know, I was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and for the next 15 years, that was the label I lived with. Because in Australia, they didn't look at drug addiction as such rehabilitation centres. It was done through psychiatry and mental institutions. You know, my first long-term mental institution, I was 13 years old. And that was, you know, the time of cold ice baths, shock treatment, and I discovered laudanum. My God. I'd found this magic liquid that just took every pain away from me. You know, I got out of there. My father had remarried, and I got in touch with my mother, my real mother again. And why I got in touch with her was her side of the family was in the heroin business. So I started packing bricks of heroin at 13 and never looked back. I can honestly say that was the first love of my life, and it stayed the first and only love of my life until much later on. You know, I've had a very checkered, do you use that term here? I've had a very checkered past. I lost my passport. I was not allowed to go out of Australia for 20 years. And, you know, and the place that I had been before this happened were either illegally or, you know, under the radar. So, you know, when I lost my passport, it was like, you know, another thing to blame. It was poor me, you know. I was a really, really great manipulator with the poor me's, you know. And that's how I came back into this fellowship, to be truthful. You know, I got introduced to these rooms quite young. I mean, NA in Australia is relatively, we're still fledglings. It's only about 38 years old, and I've been around for 36 of those years. But, yet, I relapsed for 16 years because I wouldn't do anything that was asked of me. I didn't believe in anything that this program said or was written, because I wouldn't tell you I couldn't read it and I couldn't write. It was all front. It was all addictive personalities that I came in and out of these rooms with. I learned how to lie at a very early age. I lied in here for many years. I learned how to steal at a very early age. I stole from you guys. You know, I classify those years, those 16 years of in and out, I was an NA thief. And why I do service today is to try and pay back a little of what was given to me. Because not one time did anybody in this fellowship say, fuck off, leave me alone, or shut up. You know? Oh, I had a few, you know, take the cotton wool out of your ears and put it in your mouth times. I had quite a few of those. I spent 19 years on methadone, in and out of this, in and out of the rooms. You know, I used to fall off my seat in the back of meetings and I'd end up on the floor at just about every meeting I went to. And I absolutely believed the first word of the first 11 steps was me, because I was on the floor looking at them upside down. I honestly believed that it said me. So my attitude never changed. You know, if you didn't do for me, or if you didn't get for me, or if you weren't here for me, what good was this program? You know, I've buried two sisters, a brother and a mother from this disease. I am the oldest out of seven children and the only one that's found this new way of life. Absolutely incredible. I still literally have to pinch myself. You know, my peer group when I was growing up, there was the six of us. You know, they used to call us the Stoner Six. Now, today, there's three of us left. You know, three are dead, one's incarcerated for life, one guy's been on methadone and mentally institutionalised for the last 30 years. What odds? You know, my passion has been a lot, like when Art was just sharing what he shared, you know, you say something nice about me, I've melted into that carpet. You know, I find it physically, I find it physically excruciating sometimes. You can swear at me, you can kick me, you know, I know all about that. But you know, you're kind to me. That God-given nature that we discover here, it's challenging. I find it still really challenging. You know, I stopped emotionally growing, I believe, when I had that first narcotic. You know, and I look at my clean time and I go, I put them together. Okay, I was 11, I'm 17 years clean. I'm only that mature. So I'm still a fucking kid. You know, I'm actually discovering that I have innocence. I have a childhood. You are all my classmates. You know, I'm telling you. If I sit behind somebody in a meeting, it's really rare for me not to pull your shirt or pinch you, or, you know, I still feel really cheeky. So be careful. That's why I deliberately sat where no one was in front of me, because I just, you know. And when you take a photo with me, it's like my first reaction is I poke out my tongue and they go, oh please, can you take another one? I'll keep it inside this time. You know, when they say, you know, the things about this program, like I was never told it was a better way of life, it was a healthier way of life, it was a gooder way of life, it was a stronger way of life, it was the greatest way of life. All I was told and guaranteed, if I stuck to the program and did the steps, followed the traditions and worked with the spiritual concepts of this program, I was guaranteed a new way of life. And that to me was exceptional. Because I'd only known an old way of life and an old way of living. Everything was old in my universe. Everything was the same in my universe. Everything was the same thing day after day after day. They talk about, you know, the merry-go-round of addiction. My favourite ride when I was a kid, and I never went on one, was the roller coaster. And then when I got here, I went for my first roller coaster ride when I was 5 years clean. And I tell you, I'm still on that roller coaster. High, low, sideways, up or down, I love every second of it. You know, I often think about, you know, some of the tragedies that were my life, and that's just, they were my life. They're actually not me today. I don't live, you know, I'll share about the abuse and that for somebody out there that needs to hear it and feel that they're not alone, because that was what was done for me, you know. I wholeheartedly believe, from not doing the steps, from having fantasy sponsors, from saying all the right things at the wrong time, that doesn't get me anywhere. That was purely my addictive nature. And coming here and giving the steps a go, I mean, okay, this is how I came back in. I thought I'd struck the CUDA like the absolute jackpot, you know? Millionaire status of, I got to be on 2 methadone programs a day. I wangled it so the government would give me a dose and I got a private institution to give me a dose, you know? And I thought I'd struck gold. But I forgot that I was living in this little one room, one sink place with, you know, cigarette burns and everything I had. And if I had stuff, it wasn't mine. You know, I'd jump a clothesline or two and grab somebody else's stuff. I thought I'd hit the jackpot. You know, it was my shortest relapse. I'd gone to a meeting the day before I was turning 4 years clean, and I bumped a friend coming back from Asia, and she said, I've got a present for you. And I said, great, I've been a good girl for 4 years, let's party. Now, that mightn't sound much, but I tell you what, it was the shortest, most horrific, most degrading. Somebody mentioned dereliction before. Oh my God, that doesn't even describe it. That was 9 months of, you know, I thought the other relapses had been pretty horrific and, you know, I'd gone to hell and back, but this was absolutely insane. I'm picking up my methadone. I'm having a heart attack. Like the basic text says, you know, would it be insane to ask for a heart attack? That's me, written right on those pages. Because I'm going down, still holding the throat of the nurse, saying, if you don't give me my dough, I'm going to fucking cut ya. You know? If you don't give it to me, I'm going to cut ya. You know? They dosed me. You know? And 3 months later, I woke up in intensive care. And you know who was there? Not the police, not my family, not doctors. A nurse wouldn't even come near my bed because apparently I was just, you know, fitting and fighting everybody. It was members from my local fellowship. You know, they didn't say anything. They just dropped off a bit of fruit and a pamphlet every day. Now, I ate that fruit and I threw the pamphlet in the bin, as you do. You know, it's the last thing I wanted to, you know, see. I knew I was an addict. I wanted to be. I thought that was my aim in life because it was a family business. Like, it was even 3 generations of our family business was the import and export of drugs. So I thought I'd made it. But little did I know that this program, like, I love saying thank God for NA and thank NA for God. I dismissed this program so many times because I blamed my abuse from the church for so long at looking at that word God and saying I can have this in my life. But my head would say, no, this was done to you because you are fundamentally something wrong with you or you're crazy. And I dismissed anything spiritual about this program for so many years. It took me 5 years to learn how to pray. Well, not learn how to pray, to say the prayers. You know, when I went back to a rehabilitation centre, one that I'd been 20 years previous, to make amends. You know, I'd stolen from workers at that rehabilitation centre. I had grown dope in the vegetable patch. I had put a still up in the back of the laundry. Now, I bolted before any of this was discovered. You know, I went back and made amends for those things. Now, that rehabilitation was for me physically. It was for nothing else, because I totally came back in on the third step. Totally, utterly came back in on the third step. And what helped me was I heard at a meeting the third step prayer. Now, there's not been a day past that I have not said that prayer. Take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live. They're the things I wanted, those really three basic. You know, I love our literature to death. My favourite piece of literature is It Works, How and Why. You know, thank our forebearers for the basic text, but I'm telling you, I'm not a basic girl. You know, I'm a junkie who used for 30 years, who is clean today, and that's exceptional. That is so exceptional that, you know, I still actually get goosebumps from it. And one knee is just shaking the shit out of my leg. Sorry about that. I've just got to bend it for a sec. Oh. Okay, it feels a bit better. Whew. And everything that Art said is true. You know, I mightn't have seen what he said for me, but I think that about him and about you guys. Everywhere I've connected with people. Now, I'm just like you guys. I was a person that only wanted to know you if you had dope. I didn't care if you had a nice home or you had a flash car or you had a nice pair of shoes. All that came when I got into recovery, actually. You know, the trappings. But I just wanted to know you because you had dope when I didn't. Pure and simple. My drug of choice was more and more of yours. Fucking damn, you know? I had never, you know, and I've been in some wild trips in my life, and is somebody signalling me, or, okay, I thought he was doing the Australian lifeguard thing. I mean, my life does depend on you guys. It absolutely, like I said, I came back in on the third step. I'm still here on the third step. I love the traditions of this program. I mean, I honestly believe the steps stop us from committing suicide, and the traditions stop us from committing homicide. And the 12 concepts of service will stop us committing genocide. You know? And I see and hear a bit of that going on lately about different factions, and I'm going to shut up now because my opinion is just my fucking opinion. You know, like everybody here, like arseholes, I've got one too. Oh my God, please take that off the tape. It'll probably stop. Yeah, look, you guys have just I tried not to think too much of what I was going to share about, but there's one thing that's really dear to me at the moment, and it's I've been doing a different eighth step than a couple of other eighth and ninth steps I've done, And I've made a list of people I've needed to thank. And, you know, I've put them on, I call it an 8-step gratitude list. And coming here to the US has been a combination of that. Where I told you about my abuse from, you know, the American soldiers and that, I absolutely hated you guys. I can't tell you how much, you know. The only person I hated more was my mother, you know. And for many years, that was a really stumbling block for me because it was like I had to blame you and I had to feel sorry for myself so that I didn't have to look at that stuff. So this is my third trip. And it's been more healing and freeing than you can know. Like I said, Art and I struck up a conversation 5 years ago. And, you know, that started the healing process for me. Another thing that is on my 8-step list is to thank the members of Narcotics Anonymous that found my son for me. I gave away a son in active addiction. I was 16 years old and chose the drugs over my son. He turns 40 next week. I have two grandsons. And like I said, my gratitude is to you members. You found him for me. You connected me up with him. Even when I was throwing up, pooping my pants, you know, shaking, vibrating, I hung with you guys and you saw me through it. You know, and that was just after I was 10 years clean. You know, my sponsor, you know, gave me a good tip in early recovery. She said the first 10 years you'll be running, you know, because you're used to running. You're used to running from the law and, you know, all that stuff. So you'll be running to meetings, you'll be running to get into a relationship, you'll be running to get a job, you'll be running to the shops, you'll be, you know, just running to get the latest videos and the latest technological gadgets. But when you hit double digits, you'll walk towards God. And, you know, I rang her up 2 days after my 10th birthday and I wept. It was the first time in my recovery that I allowed myself to be that honest with my emotions. And it's still, there's still a stirring in me from it because I'm still walking towards God. You know? And what's different from the first 10 years of my recovery is I'm not walking alone. You know, I actually thought I was, but I'm not, you guys. You guys hold my hand. You nestle me. You hug. Oh, God damn. Your fucking hugs. Listen, in Australia we hold hands, right, at the end of meeting. Okay, we hug each other, you know. I come here and you shake the shit out of me internally, I'm telling you, you know, and I take it home and I go, yeah. But I wouldn't hold your hand for 2 years. Actually, it was more than 2 years. Because I was too brittle and I was too scared that you would get my sickness, my blackness, you know, my disease. Not the disease of addiction, but that disease of there's something wrong with you and you're fucking crazy. You know? You know what my insanity today is in the second step? Is here I am, a woman in recovery, like I said, who used for 30 years, and is not using today against all odds. That's crazy, man. That's so crazy. You know, it's just, fuck, you know. It's so unbelievable sometimes. You know, like I said, I'm still growing up. This is my schoolroom. Yous are my playmates. I mean, this is how way behind the eight ball I am sometimes. Friends of mine have had to tell me if someone's hitting on me. I didn't know. You know, I still don't know half the time if someone's just being nice or, you know, or if they're hitting on me. I'm still not used to that stuff because I was the predator. I was the basher. I was the fucking mutilator of myself, others. Anything God did to me, I had to goddamn do it to you, you know, to make myself feel better. But I never did. It was an excuse to take a shitload more drugs. You know, my ultimate high was oblivion. Absolute oblivion. You know, I don't know how many times they've stuck Narcan in me. You know, I know probably half a dozen times, you know, I've punched a few people out. You know, you probably have too. But waking up today, you know, the first thing that kicks into my head is the words are, God, thank you. God, thank you that I am actually not only waking up, I'm wanting to wake up. I am absolutely so awake. They're going to be terrified of me out there in a few years, I'm telling you. You know, the norms. Because we are so awake and so alive. And like, you know, the newness of this all. I mean, I love the steps. I absolutely, you know, can't do them enough. If I'm going to do a step, I always do a mini first step. Because I need to invite God into that process of the spiritual principle of, am I going to be honest here? And if I am honest, I'm going to get the acceptance to carry myself through that step. Because I didn't know how to read and write terribly that much when I came into the rooms, people gave me little slips of paper to carry around. And I'm a dictionary girl, you know, was still carrying one with me till I was 9 years clean. I didn't stop thieving till I was 6 years clean. I'm over the shame now, but that addictive nature of me was so ingrained that I thought I would absolutely disappear if I didn't do it. You know, like drugs. If I didn't take that drug, I would stop breathing. You know? So these little bits of paper, I've still got them today and I carry them around with me all the time. And people, if you want to give me a little bit of paper with, you know, a nice little bit of magic on it, I'm going to take it from you. You know, I had the steps written out really simply for me to understand. And I've loved all the meetings, how the steps have gone on further with those other spiritual principles like forgiveness, humility, etc., etc. But it was like laid out step one. If I practice, if I engage in the spiritual principle of honesty, I will get a payoff. You know? What junkie doesn't want a payoff? I'm sure. You know, I would gain acceptance in my life. Now, I didn't know what that meant, but I wanted it. You know? Step two. If I practice openness, I would gain faith. You know, in my addiction, I used to walk into places, you know, dumps, basically. We call them squats in Australia. And there was this one place where they had over the door, you know, in big Gothic print, "All ye who enter, abandon all hope and faith." Now, I thought that was crazy. I thought, that's great. You know, this is exciting. When I got here, didn't know what it meant. Because people said, no, it doesn't actually mean that. You know, step three. If I'm going to put in the action of willingness, I'm going to gain trust. Now, for me, that has been symbolically one of the most powerfulest blessings of this program. You know, I came from no trust to having no trust to not being trustworthy to having trust in my life. You know, 4 and 5 go back to honesty. 6 and 7 go back to openness. 8 and 9 go back to willingness. You know, it's not why all this is happening, it's how. How can I change? And I went, oh my God, I missed all this. Yeah, the first time, the second time around, the 15th time around, the 16th time around. You know, it's just crazy. I mean, to have it put that simply, and like, I'm sure that I was told so many things. God's time. You know, my sponsor says most of the time God has 3 answers. Yes, no, and not now. Well, I've never been happy with that. But I believe it. And most of it doesn't, it has nothing to do with me. You know, most of the time we're talking about things, you know, the traditions or, you know, a service commitment or whatever. And she says, are your fingerprints on it? And I go, oh, yes they are. She says, put your hands behind your back, bow your head, and I know what she means. Invite God into the process. You know, I used to be I still am a bit of a loud mouth sometimes, but somebody used to say in the early days, there's not one part of this program that you can do alone, and I would be always the first person to put up my hand and say, yes there is. If you pray, you're doing it alone. And they would go, but who are you inviting into the process? And I go, shut the fuck up. I'm out of here. You know, because it was like, you couldn't tell me anything. I hate it. I hate it. And that saying, I know. I know. I was, I know, girl. I know. I know. I did know. I knew about the getting and using of that drug. I knew nothing else. You know, I was lucky if I knew my name, because I've changed my name that many times through my life, and I was given names too, like the bitch over there, you know, Mandy, because I used to deal Mandrax, or Connie, because, you know, it was some other illusion that I had created. So when I got here, I mean, basically I was a bit of a blank slate. And, you know, and you guys have not only supported me, nurtured me, given me, that I am never, absolutely never going to be able to pay it back. And why I actually love the service stuff and believe it is the heart and the soul of our program. Like the steps and the newcomer are our blood. That's the blood of this fellowship. The traditions are our guts, our courage to carry on. Service is the heart and the soul. You know, I have a few friends in Iran and they do this thing with their fingers. Like that, and they put it over their heart and do the beating, and I just love it. You know, I absolutely love it. There's nothing in my life today that has not been a direct result of this program, so I can never give back enough that was given to me. And I mean, you guys, I would like to express my gratitude in a simple way. So if you please indulge me. I had some friends make this up to give to the retreat. I don't know who I'm presenting it to. So, oh, the committee. Okay. And thank you again from the bottom of my heart, from saving my ass. You know, from truly saving my life. And thank you for allowing me to be of service.